I'm Marty Moscowane. Welcome to Radio Times. If you think about the image of a yoga teacher or even a practitioner, chances are they're slim, they're female, they might be soft-spoken, they're probably white. Our guest, Jessamine Stanley, breaks that stereotype. She's African-American, she's outspoken, she's full-figured, she calls herself a fat femme. She started doing yoga during a rough time in college and has since developed a dedicated fan base through Instagram, where she posts poses and shares her views on body image and our body-shaming culture. Jessamine Stanley shares her story and her approach to yoga in her new book, Every Body Yoga. She says she wrote it for, quote, every fat person, old person, exceptionally short person, for the person who has called themselves ugly, who can't accept their beauty, who is self-conscious about their body, in other words, for everybody. She joins us to talk about yoga, about being a body-positive activist, and her life. I should add she's staying after the show for Facebook Live when she will work with Radio Times producer Trine Nuri and me, so be sure to check that out. In the meantime, Jessamine Stanley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. And to our listeners, and I'm sure folks are going to want to join the conversation, that phone number, you can text us or send a comment, 267-405-2006. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Took you several introductions to yoga to get hooked, if I can put it that way.
Yeah.
Your first introduction, you were about, what, 16 years old, and your aunt took you to a yoga
class.
Yeah,
I was 16, and it definitely was not love at first sight. My aunt was really into Bikram yoga at the time, which, if you've never practiced it, is a style of hot yoga that's practiced in a room about 104 degrees. Right? It's kind of intense. It's 26 poses done two times over a 90-minute period. It's an intense practice, even for people who've been practicing it for decades. But my aunt, it also has a very medicinal, therapeutic effect, and she was really into it, like kind of in a culty way. So she was like, oh my God, you'll love it. It's going to change your life. And I was like, I'm 16. I'm fat. I got nothing better to do. Why not go to this yoga class? And I remember walking in, and the heat felt like having a hot, damp washcloth just trapped across your face. And I was sweating in ways that I didn't even know you could sweat, sweating from my elbow creases and my eyebrows. And this is before anything has actually happened. I just walked in the room. And then we do this breathing at the beginning of class that was just so dreadful. I felt like I was going to die from breathing. I made it maybe a third of the way in through the class before I was like, I'm done. I don't need to do this anymore. I'm good. And I walked out of the room, which they tell you not to do, but I was like, I don't care. I'm dying. And I walked out of the room.
Well, you're 16 years old too, right?
Exactly. But I think that I've seen a lot of people have this experience, even people who are, you know, in their 50s, 60s. And it's because we live in a world where everything is tailored to your comfort level. And so whenever things are not that way, we get upset. And I walked out of the room, felt immediately better, and then walked back in the room and got really, really nauseous because of the temperature change in my body. And after that, I was like, I'm done with this. I'm not doing yoga again.
But you clearly were not done with this. You came back to another class. And again, it was, you looked around, you felt like, gosh, I don't know if I fit here.
Exactly. I remember going in, one of my classmates in graduate school was really into Bikram. And she was like, it's going to change your life. It's going to make you feel so much better. And I was really depressed at the time. I was going through a really rough time. But I said, I'm not going to do this because I know that it's not for me. I know I'm not going to like it. And she wore me down. They had a Groupon pass. It was, what have you got to lose? And I remember going and thinking that this is still so hard. It's still so hot. I am the only fat person here. I am one of the only, I can't remember that first class if I was the only black person, but I feel like I was one of very few people of color. And it was a very alienating experience initially, but I didn't realize it. In my day-to-day life, I was not challenging myself. I wasn't stepping outside of any boundaries. I wasn't pushing myself. And the practice requires that you push yourself. It's the whole experience is tailored to push you out of your comfort zones. And it was so cathartic for me to be in a space where it was okay to just try something new. And it was really, really life-changing for me in terms of how I saw the rest of my life as well.
You talk about fear. And I mean, I think we all experience that under certain circumstances, certainly unfamiliar circumstances, ones where either you're being judged or even judging. I don't know whether in yoga classes, whether there are mirrors or not.
In this particular style, there are mirrors. And the reason that there are mirrors is so that you can look into the eyes of your true teacher, that you are your true teacher. So there's a great reason to do it. And I actually, in that context, find the mirrors to be awesome.
Right.
But in other contexts where that's not the case, it is definitely intimidating to just be like, I'm just looking at my body, and not just my body. I'm looking at the bodies of everyone else around me. It's extremely intimidating. And even without the mirrors, the fear of having other people judge you, and especially whenever it seems as though everyone else is so good at it, and how, you know, everyone else has the same leggings and the right mat, and, you know, you're the odd man out. It's a very intimidating and very fearful experience.
So you essentially went home, I mean, yeah. to develop your approach, your philosophy, and also to begin posting things on Instagram. So clearly, you wanted to explore this yoga thing.
I did. It wasn't really that clear to me. So I was practicing in studios, and it gave me a lot of confidence. It gave me the confidence to leave the town that I was living in then and move to the town that I live in now. And when I moved there, I didn't have the money to practice in studios. And we forget this, but yoga is extremely expensive and very cost prohibitive. And I started practicing at home because I still wanted to get that medicine for myself. But I didn't. The only reason that I started posting on Instagram was so that I could track my alignment over time. It wasn't really I had no idea that anything that's happening right now was coming. I was very much just like, I want to keep a log of my practice so that I can see the change over time and so that I can feel as though I'm a part of a bigger community.
Well, I should say that, what do you have, 300,000 followers, something like that?
That's so weird. Yeah.
Something you didn't anticipate a couple of years ago. But what does that tell you?
I think it says that there are a lot of people who feel left out. And there are a lot of people who think that, because initially the response that I got from people, I was expecting to get alignment tips and help from other teachers and students. But instead, I got a ton of people being like, I didn't know fat people could do yoga. And I was just thinking, why do you think fat people can't do yoga? There's every kind of people that do yoga. And I think that because there are so few representations in the media of this, anybody who looks different than a white, cisgender, heterosexual woman, I think that that means that they are attracted to me. And as unintentional as it is, and I still feel like as the followership grows, I'm not doing anything to make this grow. So I'm just kind of, I'm as astounded as anyone else. Yeah. And I think that it really does show that we are living in a time where there are a lot of people who don't see themselves at all.
And that clearly is the positive side of Instagram and social media. There's the negative side. There are the trolls who will judge anybody about anything. You have to deal with that as well.
I do. In my mind, the hardest part of Instagram is that I believe that the poses become trivialized because of the way that we photograph them, and it makes it seem like kind of like a circus sideshow act. It's like, wow, look at the amazing fat black girl. Look what she can do. In my mind, trolls are just a part of the internet, because there's always going to be someone who feels as though their life is sad and that the way that they can make themselves feel better is to take that out on a complete stranger. And I think that if you are going to be vulnerable on the internet, you have to expect that that sort of feedback is going to come. And in my mind, I just don't care. I feel like it's not a useful way for me to spend my energy.
Well, let me quote you. You say, what if I'm the fattest person in the class and everyone stares at me? Then you go on to write, look, before we get a step further, let me just answer your question with a question. Who cares?
Exactly. Exactly. Who cares? Because people stare at things that they don't understand. And that's just what happens. And I think that for me, it's helpful to remember that when people look at me and have a judgment, they really have that judgment about themselves, and they're just reflecting that. And it's very important, if I'm trying to look for compassion within myself, to reflect that compassion to other people. And I think that there are a lot of people who are too intimidated to even go to class because they're afraid of the gaze of other people. And the reality is that people are going to stare at you. Right. They're just going to. And you have to determine how you're going to feel about that.
You know, it's funny. I've talked to people that from the outside, you would think, they look perfect. I mean, look like there's nothing wrong with them. But you dig a little deeper, and they also don't like their body. I think this is particularly true for women.
Oh, yeah.
Although I think maybe more and more true for men. But even if the outside looks like the right package, on the inside, it doesn't work.
I think that when people think of my classes, because I'm fat-bodied, because I'm black, they expect that it's going to be predominantly other fat-bodied black women. I will say that my classes are very diverse, but there's still plenty of slender, cisgender, heterosexual white women who feel the exact same discrimination that other people do. And it's because the imagery is so unattainable. It's airbrushed into a space where you can't even really see yourself. And I think that when I see how many women who fit the bill, who you could see on the cover of Yoga Journal, when I see that they have that same body dysmorphia, I'm like, okay, yeah, we need to pump the brakes.
But there is fat shaming. I mean, there's no question about it. I don't need to tell you this. I mean,
there's fat shaming?
this is real.
Yeah. I think that we live in a society where it's become totally socially acceptable to fat shame because it is always done under the guise of concern about health. And I think that if you were really concerned about someone's health, you would not fat shame. That's not the way to go about it. And I also think that regardless of what another person thinks, I can't spend my life being concerned about that. And especially because I get all kinds of comments from people being like, you're promoting obesity, you're promoting unhealthy lifestyles. And I'm always like, I'm pretty sure I'm not, because I'm pretty sure that I'm promoting the yoga lifestyle and that doesn't have anything to do with living an unhealthy lifestyle. And I think that, and in the book, I talk about my own experience with gaining weight and that there are a lot of different socioeconomic and just personal history reasons why that happens. And I don't think it's something that I need to be ashamed of. And I think that it's very important for other people to see that regardless of what your body looks like, that you can continue to accomplish your athletic goals or any kind of goal.
About a minute before our first break here, has yoga helped you feel that way?
It has. Yoga has definitely given me the space to really look within myself so that I'm not so distracted by what else is going on in the world. And I will say, I feel like I'm making this all sound really easy. Like just, oh yeah, just forget about what other people think. It's no big deal. It is hard. But it's very helpful for me that I was bullied when I was a kid. I've dealt with having people fat shame me for the entirety of my life. I'm not gonna spend the rest of my life being concerned about that. And yoga really gives the space for that to not be a concern.
And obviously there are good days and bad days.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's an up and down thing. And that's what's so weird to me about people thinking that she must have it all together. She knows everything. And I'm like, dude, I'm just trying to wake up and feel good about myself the same way everyone else is.
Well, let's take that break and then we'll get back to our conversation with Jessamyn Stanley. She's got a new book, Everybody Yoga. That's three words. Let go of fear, get on the mat, love your body. We're going to take a short break. Get back to our conversation, as I just said, and you can join our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can text and call our comment line 267-405-2006 to get you in on the conversation. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen, and I'm talking with Jessamyn Stanley. She's a feminist, a body-positive activist. She's a yoga instructor, and she's got a new book. It's her first book called Everybody Yoga. She just mimicked me here.
It's wild to hear you say that, though, and I was having a moment.
this is your first book. I mean, the fact that you have written a book.
Yeah, it's crazy. I think that for me, it was always coming, though. This book had to come out. But I still just feel like, oh, that's so weird.
Yeah, well, here you are. You do, in part of writing about yoga, is also talking a little bit about your life, about growing up. You grew up in the South.
I did.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Greensboro, North Carolina, but a suburb just outside of it that's called Jamestown. It's a predominantly white community, and it was very difficult for me to grow up in a community where I was really taught to look a way that I do not biologically look. And I didn't even start to assess this damage at all until I was an adult, but it's something that I think is a very, very common experience for women of color who grow up in predominantly white communities. And for me, it had some really negative effects, some negative long-term effects.
Although you say you do come from a family of curvy black women.
I do. My family is, I mean, lots of curvy women who are proud of themselves. Still a fair amount of self-body shaming, though, which is a common thing. But it was just growing up in a community where it was not okay to have your hair natural. Now that everyone has, you know, locked hair, dreadlocks, or they have natural hair. But back in the 90s, that was not popular. And in fact, there was a lot of self-shame within the black community about having natural hair. And when I was in elementary school, my mother decided that we would lock our hair. I tell the story in the book.
You do.
That we would lock our hair. And she was really excited about it. And her hair is still locked to this day. It's very beautiful. I was very upset about it, though, and I felt like, you know, I didn't look like Kirsten Dunst. I didn't look like the blonde perfect angel, like that kind of ideology, and I wanted to look that way, and it was very difficult for me to reconcile those feelings.
You also talk about the fact that it sounds like a very close family, that your mother got seriously ill, kind of undiagnosed illness, at least for a while. And for you and your brother, it was traumatic. It was, and she was sort of home in her bed dealing with this mysterious
problem. It was a very strange situation. She went to the Beijing Conference for Women in, I guess this was like 96 or something, 95. And she got really sick right after she got back. And it was the kind of thing where she just has a cold and seems like a really bad cold. And it just kept going on and on. And it ended up that she was essentially bedridden for a couple of years.
Wow.
And my father, they were very young when they got married. My father was working two jobs to support us. And my brother and I spent a lot of time alone. And during that time, we would eat, but we would also just be very, very lonely. And it was a bleak time. My mom actually, I don't want to go into more detail about this, but she passed away on an operating table and had to be brought back to life. Successfully, she is alive today.
I was going to say.
But it was a very difficult time. And during that time, so we had our hair locked and I hated it. And one of her friends also hated it and thought that it was not an appropriate hairstyle for someone my age. And she cut off my locks while my mom was in the hospital and gave me braids for the first time. And I felt like, braids are so beautiful. This is how I'm supposed to look. And I went the next like 12 to 13 years getting my hair braided obsessively. I would not let anyone see my natural hair. And that was damage that I really didn't even start to notice until I was much older.
Not to get too deep, but what was wrong with your, I mean, what was the problem your mother had?
She has congestive heart failure, which is a, and so now she has a, well, it was just removed actually last year, but a defibrillator in her chest. And it was, at the time, this kind of disease is way more, they know more about it. But now, like back then, nobody knew about it. It was it was rough.
Well, as much as that was certainly part of your life, you tried out for cheerleading. You were the first runner-up for Miss Preteen North Carolina for the pageant. So clearly you weren't just hiding somewhere in your house. You were out and about.
Yeah, but I think when I look back on those experiences, I feel like I see a very clear cry for help, like a need to be in front of other people, to have my physical beauty assessed and to say, she is beautiful because this panel of judges says so. And yeah, I was really active, dance classes, the cheerleading. Oh my goodness. The need
cheerleading is really hard.
It is really hard. And I think that for me, because at the time, especially, cheerleading was really, really popular. And it was just like the mark of beauty. If you could do toe touches and handstands and things like that, back handsprings, then your self-worth was there laid out. And I tried out for my middle school team. They did not agree that I would be good on the team. At the time, I was really upset. In retrospect, I see that they were making a smart decision. I was not prepared for that kind of work. But it definitely did set me up for some weird feelings about myself later.
You do write. Once you go to the nationals for the, I guess, the preteen pageant, just seeing these, what's the word? I'm not even sure the word to describe these hyper competitive, often mother daughter teams where, you know, they are just determined to.
And they have it all together.
And they have it all together.
They're not here, you know, picking up a dress from, I mean, my parents did not have money for me to be in pageants. So they, I mean, everything that we did was like scraped together. And there were people there who, they had all of their stuff together. And yeah, my little local pageant, I could swing a first runner up. But at the national pageant, absolutely not. And it was a mortifying experience for me. But at the same time, I'm so grateful for that experience because it's very helpful to have. I really think that the bad experiences in our life are more important than the good experiences. They teach you more about yourself. So it sucked, but I'm better off.
But you're better off. And just a couple of other things, only because you write about them. And it seems like that you were maybe drinking too much or certainly got yourself into some hot water when it came to drinking.
Alcohol abuse in college-age women is way too common, and it's really not talked about at all. And that was part of why I wanted to talk about it in the book, because I was and continue to be friends with a lot of people who have alcohol problems. And we don't talk about it because it's not really socially acceptable. Once you start using the A word, once you start using alcoholic, it is very difficult for people to even move forward. And I didn't even really realize that I had a problem until I got a DUI. And that was something that could have been so much worse than it actually was. But it was, and I didn't really talk about this in the book as much, but sitting in a jail cell when you have no other reason to be there is very sobering on many levels. And for me, it was one of the best experiences of my life, one of the worst and one of the most expensive and one of the most dangerous, but very helpful, because I think that you can't really know how far down you're going until you have your face slapped against the pavement. And it's been very helpful for me to just acknowledge that I have a problem with that and to be really, really conscious of it. And I don't really care if other people do the same. It's really very much a practice for myself.
So you just stay away from it?
No, I'm just very conscious of it. I just think about it. I know where my limits are. And I stop in those spaces. But I grew up in my parents are staunch Baha'is. Alcohol is not consumed in the Baha'i faith. And we never talked about alcohol at all. And my mom and I have talked about that since then. And she's like, I guess that it's not good to just not talk about things. And I'm like, oh, yeah, because it was one of those things where it's on a pedestal. And then as soon as I had access to it, I was like, what's going on with this? And I mean, I come from a line of, part of the reason why my parents never talked about alcohol is because they were raised by alcoholics. And so it was difficult for them to even get into that space.
That's Jessamine Stanley, our guest today on Radio Times. We're talking a bit about her life, also talking about yoga. And again, she's got a new book, Everybody Yoga, Let Go of Fear, Get on the Mat, Love Your Body. It's about how she got to yoga, if I can put it that way. She has used social media, Instagram, to put out her poses and to talk about things like fat shaming and our body shaming culture and how to love and know and accept your body. Farts and all, right?
All the farts, every fart, and every weird thing that we're taught to think is not that. That's normal, but we're taught to think it's weird.
Let me give out that phone number again. This is our text comment line, 267-405-2006. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at @whyyradiotimes. I was looking at some of the videos and things that you were, or Instagrams that you have put out, and it is about accepting just all the things that our body does that we have euphemisms for or we don't acknowledge. I'm just curious about the sort of, I guess, the point at which you feel you are in your life. What I hear are these difficult times that you learn from. There's a kind of theme from the deep, dark times can be a learning experience.
Yeah, I think that we tend to want to block out the dark times and that we want to pretend as though they didn't happen. And for me, especially in my yoga practice, it's very helpful to just be upfront about them and to not to say like, oh, this was so great, or I overlooked what a great learning lesson there was here, but just to accept. And acceptance is something that is very, very hard won. And I think that we underestimate how important it is. But for me to just really see the parts of myself that I've been taught to think are bad and to just accept them is really amazing, because then I can leap forward. I can do all the things that I was taught I can't do. And it's because I'm just accepting myself for who I am.
And what kind of yoga would you say you practice?
So I teach vinyasa style yoga, which is it's uniting breath with motion. And it's a very dancey style of yoga. You don't stay in the postures that long. You move from one to one very quickly. But I also really enjoy yin style yoga, which is a much slower paced, and it uses a lot of props to allow your body to go deeper. And I like to mix those two and to see the kind of energy that they bring up in different people. But there are so many different styles of yoga, and there's a different style for every single person. And I think that whenever you are becoming more comfortable with yourself in a yoga practice, it's important to try lots of different styles and to just see, because you never know what could really make sense for you.
You mentioned breathing. This was something we talked about before going on the air. Years ago, I took acting classes, and honestly, it was about breathing.
It's all about breathing.
It's all about breathing. Even if you're having trouble sleeping, sometimes just deep breaths can get you back to sleep.
So often what we experience as anxiety or pain or frustration or fear is really just not breathing. And if you actually just take a moment to focus on that, and it might turn into more than one moment, it might turn into like several minutes or maybe even hours, but if you really take the time to focus on your breathing, you can see just how much you are holding in. And I think that in yoga we become so obsessed with the poses. Everything is about the shapes and wanting to be upside down and wanting to, and really all of that need to like practice these very difficult poses, it's ego. It has nothing to do with the actual purpose of practicing. And ultimately, the only reason to work on any of those poses where one-handed handstands or arm balances or anything like that, the only reason to do that is so that you can breathe better, to come into a deeper connection with your breath. And I think that especially when you're beginning a yoga practice, it's very helpful to just focus on breathing. Let that be your goal.
And is that just, it's deep breathing, it's conscious breathing? What is it?
Yeah, in the book I talk about the breath work that really works for me. I think that it's a lot of deep inhaling through the nose, deep exhaling through the nose. You can alternate. There are so many different techniques for pranayama. This is the like Sanskrit word for it, which is prana, the cosmic energy that unites all of us and the way that it moves from person to person. And there are, again, there's a lot of different ways. I also really like alternate nostril breathing, which I talk about in the book. There's counted breathing. There's so many different ways to work on this, but I think that the best way to just jump in through the nose, out through the nose, without any obsession, without any fear, in through the nose, out through the nose.
How much do you think yoga is about the as you say, the poses, the breathing, and what's going on in your head? I think I've sometimes seen that referred to as monkey mind. I mean, the idea that our thoughts are just kind of jumping around in our head.
Yeah. You know, the outside world, the world that we live in, is very chaotic and it's very distracting. And it's only natural that we would become hung up on those things. And I think it's helpful if you are really just trying to be accepting of those thoughts, as opposed to saying, like, I shouldn't be thinking about this thing or I shouldn't be thinking about that thing. You just give up to those thoughts. You can't obsess over them forever, but we all have so much baggage that we're not letting go of. And it's helpful to just say, I'm just going to let my mind be crazy, because eventually it won't be crazy.
And the idea when it says, oh, only 25 more minutes. What are you doing?
I think that if you can't think about the time, you know, you can't think about the time. And we, again, with everyone living in this world of immediate gratification and things being tailored to your own happiness. And I think that it's important to just be in it for being in it. Don't obsess over how long it's going to be.
Let me read a text from Danielle. She says, I struggle with being a big girl with curly hair, grew up very poor. Thank you for having the courage to give a beautiful voice to our stories. I recently began talking about my mental health struggles on Facebook, and my family panicked. I talked about it because it's too important not to. Namaste, she says to you.
Oh, Danielle, that is exactly why I talk about my struggles with mental health, because it is seen as so socially unacceptable to talk about these things, particularly within the African-American community. No one talks about mental health. And when you talk about yoga, people always talk about the physical benefits. It's like, oh, you're going to be more flexible, you're going to be stronger, all of this. That really doesn't matter. The point and the reason that you got to get into it is because it is going to give you clarification in your life that you could not get otherwise. And especially if you struggle with anxiety or with depression, it's really helpful to have something that you can just, a beacon within yourself that you can look towards. So I'm glad that everyone else is on that page too.
Why an issue for African Americans to not talk about this stuff?
You know, I think there's probably a million reasons for that.
Painful?
I don't know.
It's just too painful?
I don't know. I don't want to make too many blanket statements, but I do think that it is overwhelmingly common to, maybe it's a power thing or a strength thing or not wanting to show your weakness. But I know that even in talking about it with my family members, that there is a no one wants to talk about this. And it's really important for us to be honest about what's going on and to make space for other people to be honest with themselves as well.
Well, I think that's, and I have to say, sort of being introduced to you first through your videos is your being so honest and putting things out there and saying things that make probably you and probably make other people uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. It's a lot of making people uncomfortable, not really intentionally, but just accepting that not everything is pretty. Not everything is great. And I think that there's a misconception with yoga that everything is just going to be so beautiful and so perfect. And yoga is about truth and authenticity. It's not about perfect or happy. And when you are in that space of just looking for truth and authenticity, so much can be accomplished. So much can be learned.
Well, we're talking about just about everything in this hour of Radio Times with our guest, Jessamine Stanley. And again, we've been talking a bit about her life, her approach to yoga. She's got a new book, Everybody Yoga, Let Go of Fear, Get on the Mat, Love Your Body. And again, you can join our conversation. We've got some open lines, 267-405-2006. You can text or call. That's our comment line. And you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at whyy. Radio Times. And we'll be doing a Facebook Live with our guest after the show is over. So be sure to stay for that. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Jessamine Stanley. And if you have seen her pictures on your social media feed, you know she is proud of her full figure. She's a feminist. She's a body positive activist. She's a yoga instructor, encouraging everyone, no matter their shape, their size, their color, their gender, their age, to get on a yoga mat. She didn't always feel this way. She didn't exactly like the way she looked when she was growing up, didn't fit the stereotype of health and beauty. And again, she's got a new book, Everybody Yoga, Let Go of Fear, Get on the Mat, Love Your Body. And again, you can join our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Here's a tweet from Dr. Kelly. As a fat black woman who is moved by yoga, I thank you for being so auspiciously excellent at it in your body.
Oh, man. I'm glad that we're all out here. Fat black women practicing yoga. Yes. We need community, man.
Why do you think yoga has become so, quote unquote, popular? I'm not sure if exactly the right word, but certainly it seems like it's certainly being practiced more and talked about more.
It's very trendy and popular right now. And I think that has a lot to do with, like, wanting to have a certain lifestyle, wanting to project a certain lifestyle. And I noticed that a lot of people who feel like their yoga practices are strong, they make that decision based on how many leggings they own, where they can afford to go on retreat, whether or not they drink coconut water and kombucha, you know, all of these things that really have absolutely nothing to do with yoga. But that lifestyle is so exciting. And it's like, I just think that people become way too obsessed with that and really not that interested in looking within themselves. And so even though it's popular, is it popular for the right reasons?
I don't know. You wonder about that?
Yeah, I think that it's really important for us to get back to the true, the spiritual aspects of this practice. And I know as soon as you start using the word spirituality, it's like everyone has an opinion. Everyone feels a certain way. It has nothing to do with religion. It has nothing to do with anything other than your connection to that, which is larger than yourself. And I feel like when you get to that, yoga is a spiritual life path. Hmm. It's not a fitness trend. It's not a lifestyle that you need to emulate. And when you go down that road, everyone can find a space for this within their life. And I've thought that, like, if I ever decide to have children, that I would want to be practicing the whole time that I'm pregnant, and then immediately as soon as the child is born, be practicing with them. Because this is something that will carry you through your entire life. Like, yes, mm-hmm. I came to it in my 20s. There are people who come to it much later than that. And I think that that's awesome. But if you can get it from the ground up, you can hold this the rest of your life. And one more thing about this, because I feel like it's particularly important for children, because if you learn from a young age that the way that you should approach a difficult experience or a challenge is by sitting quietly and really reflecting on yourself, that's an amazing tool for the rest of your life. And I see people doing this, like, I mean, there's kids yoga in schools, but also there's a school that uses meditation as detention. And I'm just like,
as detention.
So when you do something that you shouldn't be doing, you sit quietly and you think about it, really think about it and reflect on your role in it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when you give that as a tool from a young age, you're set for life.
Wow. I hear you also saying that it is misunderstood when there are so many rules and the focus, as you say, on a very specific kind of pose and holding it for a certain period of time.
Yeah, it turns into this thing like kind of like synchronized swimming or dancing, where you want to be in time with everyone else and you want to make sure that you have your body exactly right. And so that people don't even care about the actual experience of just breathing and working with your body, and it becomes solely about how you look by comparison to other people. Right. And I talk about this in Everybody Yoga, the idea of how do I look versus how do I feel. For me, that has been, it's a game changer, because when you think, how often am I asking how do I look to other people all the time? You never say, how do I feel to myself? So that if you are focused only on how do I feel, it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks. It doesn't matter if you're in time with other people. Because if you feel good, if you feel like you're in connection with your spirit, then you're good.
Do you feel like you're a different person than you were 5-6 years ago?
Absolutely. And if you told me that I was going to be doing what I'm doing now, I would never have believed you. Because even up until, 3 to 4 years ago, I had absolutely no interest in being a yoga teacher. That was not a goal for me.
What did you think you would be doing?
Well, lesser known just in fact, I went to culinary school, and I was interested in and still am interested in food styling and working with food. And I worked in a restaurant up until I had to quit to teach full time. And I still feel like there are many different things that I'm interested in, but it's weird to say this, but I feel like I was called to do this because I would not be doing it otherwise. And I think that there are way too many people who don't see themselves for me to say, yeah, but that's not really what I want to do right now. You know, like, it's clear that this needs to happen.
We have a question from a listener wanting to know, are you religious? You had talked about this kind of spiritual feeling or identity.
Yeah, I did. I talked about this recently on Instagram because I never usually talk about religion because I just don't. Well, let me back up. So I was raised in a very religious household. And
this is Baha'i, right?
Yeah, I was raised a Baha'i. And that had a very negative effect on me, where I, as it tends to do for a lot of people, and I found myself just drifting away from the faith for the vast majority of the last 10 years. And the older that I get, the more that I still feel a connection to the way that I was raised. And so that is still in my life practices. And I do still celebrate different Baha'i holidays. And for example, we just had a fasting period that ended. And that's one of the most clarifying cleansing times of the year for me. So I did participate in that. And I don't really consider myself to be a religious person, but I do consider myself to be a spiritual person. Mm-hmm. And I think that connecting to, so we understand oxygen as being the thing that connects us all. That's how we understand it on a scientific level. But prana is, it is a cosmic energy. And that energy is so amazing to me. And it leads to so many bigger connections. And that journey has been really powerful for me. And I feel like I can't walk away from that. But I don't want to get too specific.
No, no.
Yeah, I just don't. I think that everyone has their way of understanding this universe.
Right.
And that it's important to be true to that for yourself. And that it doesn't make sense that we would all feel the same way about it. And I am very respectful of other people and the way that they choose to feel. And for me, I'm just trying to connect to the prana. That's it.
How does your family, do they understand this journey that you've been on?
They're starting to understand it now, but I definitely, so when I started practicing, I was in graduate school. I was very depressed and I left graduate school. When I did that, my father was furious and he was like, I distinctly remember him saying, "This is the mistake of your life. Like, why would you do this?" He was so furious, and they don't take social media seriously. They don't care about these things. And he, even after my, I was becoming more popular, quote, popular on Instagram. He didn't care about that. He doesn't care about that. I had some press notoriety. He doesn't care about that. But he, as time has gone on, has become more accepting. My mom is, I think that she considers the book and everything kind of like a grandchild. So it's, instead of being able to say that she has a grandchild, it's like, oh yeah, okay, so Jessamine wrote this book. But to them, I'm still the same person that I've always been. And to me, that is extremely important. And I don't need for them to really get it.
You describe them as a kind of Ozzy and Harriet couple.
Yeah.
Which is...
My mom was so...
Kind
she was
of dated,
like,
but yeah, and adorable.
Yeah. My parents were raised in these environments where they didn't always feel like they had the support of... But, I mean, they were both raised in single-parent households where one of the parents was struggling. And they felt like they wanted to do the opposite for their children. And it's just a very interesting dynamic, though, because they don't see themselves as, like, Ozzy and Harriet. And when my mom read that, she was like, "Is that really how you feel about us?" And I was like, obviously, you always, like... But they, I don't know, they're extremely supportive of me overall, even when they don't get it. But they definitely did not get this for a while, for sure.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. Talking with Jessamine Stanley, and her book is Everybody Yoga. We are talking both about her life and about doing yoga, what yoga has taught her about herself. And again, you can join our conversation. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. You can also text us 267-405-2006. A tweet from Pamela. She says, "My muscles, joints are inflexible in the extreme, even with stretch preps. Would a chair yoga be a good option?"
That would be awesome. And there are so many ways to adapt this practice toward wherever you are. And it's wild to me that this practice is associated with being able-bodied and, you know, being able to move really quickly and really with a lot of agility, because everyone that I know who really digs into this practice did so because they had some kind of injury. And if you have joint problems, if you have bone problems, if you have, I mean, there's so many different things that happen to us. If you've had cancer and you're trying to find your way back, if you had a baby and now your whole body is completely different, these are the reasons to come to the practice, because it is going to heal you. And more than healing your physical body, it's going to heal your spirit and it's going to heal your mind. And that kind of work really can't be, so it doesn't, it doesn't matter so much if you're doing it in a chair or if you're even doing it laying down. If you can find a way to make it work, it'll be perfect. And one of my teachers, actually, Stephanie Keach of Asheville Yoga Center, the whole reason that she even came to this practice is because she broke her back and she was in bed and could not get out of bed. And they told her that she was not going to be able to walk again. And she read Light on Yoga by BKS Iyengar and just started to adapt the poses from being in bed. And eventually she rolled out of bed. And now she's like a master Ashtanga yoga teacher. And I think that when you are patient with yourself, that is the hardest part, is being patient. And just being really loving with where you are today, then everything that you get is going to be exactly what you need.
You have a section in your book. There are lots of poses and things to do. One are the sun salutations. Why is that important?
Sun sals really allow you to invite energy, this prana, into your body. And it's a very direct connection to that which is bigger than us. And especially in the morning, if you can do even just one sun salutation, and you can adapt it to sitting in a chair or being in bed or whatever, if you can invite that into your life, you're inviting so much positive energy, so much light. It's not about being able to show how strong or how flexible you are. Like, yes, as time goes on, especially if you practice more sun salutations, your body is going to be very strong. It's going to be very flexible. You're going to have a lot of agility. But especially in the beginning, that's really not the reason to do it. It's going to wake you up, fully wake you up inside and out.
And is it looking at the sun? I mean, as the sun comes up, does it's that like, matter?
I mean, you can do that, but it's really just about invite. It's a lot of arms raising, arms coming down. And when you are raising your arms, it's literally inviting that energy into your body. And as you like move through the poses, it continues to kindle that energy. And then by the end of the little sequence, then you are filled with so much light and energy. And I think that we kind of underestimate how important that kind of energy can be, because that's the energy that carries you through your day. It makes you feel strong and powerful in moments when you really don't feel strong and powerful, and moments where you feel stressed and feel as though. And it's awesome, not just in the morning, but in the evening or in the middle of the day. As long as you can insert it somewhere, it can make such a difference. But I definitely think that sun salutation A in particular, which is in Everybody Yoga, it's a great way to just jump into the practice.
Does yoga help with a book tour?
I need my yoga practice more now than I have ever needed it in my life.
I mean, and book tours can be grueling.
It is. And I think that it's very important. It is grueling, but I think that whenever you are constantly interacting with new people and really, there's a lot of temptation to think of yourself or see yourself as bigger than what you actually are. And I notice this a lot in the social media world, that it becomes this, you know, you accidentally get a really big head. And for me, it's really imperative to stay away from that. And I'm constantly just retreating to my yoga practice, my personal yoga practice that is not for show, that is not on Instagram, that I have something that is just for me. And it has, I don't know how I could do this tour without it.
Really? Mm-hmm. And you're also working on another book?
Yeah. The idea behind the second book is that after you read Everybody Yoga, after you start practicing yoga, there are all kinds of questions that come up about the way that we interact in our day-to-day lives. And this yoga practice really isn't just about being on your mat. It's about taking these lessons that you learn on your mat into the other parts of your life. And I've had so many experiences where I've run into conflict as a result of that. And especially because we live in an extraordinarily materialistic and just body negative, hateful world, it brings up all these really interesting questions that no one talks about. Everything in yoga is about namaste, so pretty, like look at the sunshine. And the second book is about, yeah, but what about the dark side?
Yeah.
What about the other things?
Well, it's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much, Jessamyn Stanley, for
joining us
today on Radio Times. And again, her new book, it's her first book, Everybody Yoga, three different words, Let Go of Fear, Get on the Mat, and Love Your Body. I should add that she's staying with us After Radio Times, we're going to go on Facebook Live, and she's going to show myself and also Trine Nuri, Radio Times producer, some of those poses or some of the things that we can do to help ourselves. So make sure that you check us out on Facebook Live. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, and it's produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trine Nuri. I should add that our guest is at the Free Library of Philadelphia tonight at 7:30. I'm Marty Moscowane. Thank you so much for joining us.